Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on King of OX.
Into hour two of the program, and we've got a lot coming up. Our two major talking points today, talking Blues hockey and talking Billikens basketball. Luke Korak's going to join us in about 10 minutes or so, and we'll talk with him about everything going on with the Blues, including them receiving quite the gift of Brandon Saad agreeing to basically just cancel his contract and everything that goes along with it. It's going to save the Blues some money, both from just a saving money standpoint and also, I would argue, more importantly, from a salary cap perspective. And so he's going to join us in, like I said, 10 minutes or so. And then later on in the hour, Gibson Jimerson is going to join us after a huge Billikens victory last night. Let's talk about the win for a moment because it means a lot. First off, puts them at 6-2 in A-10 play. And now they have a win against one of the teams that is considered one of the top teams in the league. So George Mason is at 6-1 in league play. They're a little bit better than I think a lot of people thought they were going to be. And then you've got VCU and SLU each sitting at 6-2 in the conference. So three teams are tied for first in the win column, and VCU and SLU are a half game back because they've got two losses, and we'll see where things go from there. So that's really good for SLU. Just now they have a win against one of the elite teams in the league. They split the series against VCU as well, so that's good. You didn't get swept in a series by one of the top teams. It continues to keep them on track to be one of the top seeds in the conference tournament. So those are all the good things that come out of it. And like we have said over and over and over again, this team only gets to the NCAA tournament if they win the conference tournament. And the best way to do that is to have the easiest path possible. Now, at the end of it, you're still going to be playing really good teams, but go get as easy of a path as possible. Have to, especially for, you know, if something's going to take this SLU team down, it's the lack of depth. It's how many minutes guys are playing. You get into the conference tournament, you're playing a bunch of games in a short amount of time. Like, that's something to be concerned about. And they'll have to figure that out. They'll see, you know, as the season goes along, you'll see if some people start to take a step forward. It's not where they want it to be, I don't think, in terms of their rotation, but at the same time, they're winning games. So that's all that really matters. Kellen Thames did not play at all yesterday. He's been dealing with some medical issues. Josh Schertz, after the game, kind of deferred comment to Thames, but making it clear in his comments about Thames as a guy that there's no off-court stuff going on of why he didn't play. It's a medical issue. So you hope that maybe you can get something out of him at some point, but at the same time, I don't know. Based off the way things were said yesterday, it's hard to really believe that there's going to be a positive outcome on that. So that's the game. And also, one other thing real quick. The equation that SLU used last night, I'm not breaking any news by saying this. Three things happened. They were better offensively. They weren't fantastic offensively, but they were better offensively. They had really, really been struggling from a shooting perspective for about four games leading into it, and they shot 48% yesterday. Not bad. 33% on three-point shots. You'd like it to be a little bit better. Although they held VCU to 16% on three-point shots. That leads to my second point. The defense yesterday was on point. Defense was so good. That's what they did last night. That if they can replicate some version of that very consistently, that's going to be their pathway to winning at a high level and going on more runs and being able to beat a lot of good teams. And then from a rebounding perspective, they were pretty good, especially in the second half. It is not a coincidence that they outscore VCU by 12 in the second half, 50-38, when they also out-rebounded them in the second half, 23-13. Those two things go hand in hand. So shoot better, and offense is always a variable. You know, the old basketball cliche about, you know, scoring can be a variable, but defense is your consistent. Well, be more closely to what you were offensively last night, if not better. Go play awesome defense like you did, and it kind of goes along with the defense, but go rebound the heck out of the basketball, and you're going to be in pretty good shape. Got a text message from the 314. Says, Matt, I'm a huge Billikens fan. I hope all the news from last night brings more awareness and fans to the arena. I hope the fight doesn't keep people away. I don't think it will. I don't think it will. This city wants to. This city so badly wants to root for a really good Billikens basketball team. And the West Pine Bills Twitter account, I think I got that right, they tweeted out a picture today of the seats that are available for Friday night. It's not a lot. Like, there's still seats available, but, man, that looks like it's going to be an awesome crowd on Friday night when they welcome in Dayton. So that's good news. That's really, really good news. I don't think the fight last night is going to stop fans from showing up. I just hate the fact that last night was such a great basketball night for the Billikens, and we're stuck here talking about a fight that happens in the stands, which is dumb. That's the frustrating thing. All I want to do is just talk about how great they played last night and what this could mean for the team moving forward. Unfortunately, and if you were, you know, all the national Twitter accounts picked it up. I mean, everybody saw it. Very few people who saw it on Twitter had any clue what the win meant for the Billikens in beating VCU. And I hate the idea that it kind of goes along with the narrative of what the city of St. Louis in some ways has turned into. But I don't think that anybody's going to say, you know what? I got tickets to that Friday game, but I can't go because I'm worried there's going to be a fight in my section. Like, I don't think that's going to be a thing. I just don't. If the Billikens play great basketball, people are going to show up, and Shea Fitz Arena is going to be absolutely filled up. We'll jump back to the Billikens when Gibson Jimerson joins us in about 20 minutes. But up next, we'll talk Blues hockey with Lou Korak. This is a Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX. Graybar Sports Open Line continues here on KMOX. A reminder for you, Gibson Jimerson from the St. Louis University men's basketball team. He is scheduled to join us in about 15 minutes. We've kind of been alternating back and forth, talking about the Billikens and their win last night and talking about the Blues and everything that's gone down over the last 24 hours or so. And we're very happy to welcome back onto the program. Covers the Blues for NHL.com. Also, you can read him at the Hockey News covering the Blues there as well. He is Lou Korak. You follow him on Twitter at LKorak10. Lou, thanks for taking the time with us. How are you?
I'm good, Matt. How are you?
I'm good. Probably not as good as the Blues because they have to be quietly celebrating when they're able to get out from underneath of Brandon Saad's contract, not just for this year, but that salary cap hit goes away for next year as well.
Yeah, that's going to be an added bonus here. Obviously, something that going into the year, you didn't anticipate. You're thinking, you know, this is a veteran guy that's, you know, for the first 3 years, been a pretty steady, solid player for you. And, you know, when you're signing him for 5 years, you're anticipating you've got this year and next year at $4.5 million. And it's, let's be honest, you know, this is a guy that at the end of the year, when you're thinking, you know what? He wasn't nothing extraordinary, but then you take a look at his stats and go, oh, 20 goals, 40, 50 points, right about what you expected him to be. But for whatever reason, it just didn't work out this year. The thing that astonishes me the most is he's played in 43 games and his 7 goals have come in 3 games.
Yeah.
That's crazy to think about. And I remember the last one, obviously, was January 3rd against Ottawa. And that first goal he scored, I don't think I can get that one out of my head because it was one of the prettier goals that I've seen scored this year. And the guy's still got ability. The guy can still play. But I'll tell you, when we were talking to Doug Armstrong yesterday and he outlined everything for us, that what their plans were of going on waivers, and if he clears, he's going down to Springfield after that. And the whole time I kept thinking, and I'm looking at him and I'm going, I don't see this guy going to Springfield. So this doesn't surprise me one bit what happened today. Obviously mutual, and good that, you know, that it didn't turn ugly or that it got ugly, because obviously, you know, a contract is a contract in the NHL, and Saad could have held the Blues and made them obligated to fulfill it. But both sides agreed to this because obviously the player still feels like he can play in the NHL. He doesn't want to uproot his family and have to go to Springfield, Massachusetts now as a 32-year-old and a guy that's been in the league a while. So an amicable split, and this is where we're at right now.
Also, where the team is at is the fact that they just, it's looked better under Jim Montgomery, but the results haven't been that much better, and we're hearing the same things about lack of energy, and we're seeing slow starts. Why? Why can't this team, is it just because of the personnel and the team's not good enough, or does it go deeper on why these issues that existed with Craig Berube coaching, existed with Drew Bannister coaching, are now continuing to exist with Jim Montgomery?
It's the million-dollar question, man, to be honest with you, and that's something that I asked Doug Armstrong yesterday. It's like, you know, this is a team that you're right there scratching and clawing for that second wild card, and yet here we are at the end of a three-game homestand, lost all three, and, you know, we've got players and coaches talking about energy being low, body language being negative, and how can that be? And to me, like you said, I just think it runs a little more deeper than this, and it got me thinking a little bit and just thinking about some of the things that Doug Armstrong said. You know, You've got a group here that should be leading by example. And I, you know, last year, and he made a good comparison. Somebody like Braden Schenn maybe didn't have the kind of year that you expected or wanted to see him have last year. And then Robert Thomas and Pavel Buchnevich did. Well, now the roles have flipped. So you haven't had the guys that you're counting on to be in your top six all going at the same time. And to me, right now, you've got Thomas and you've got Buchnevich, and it's crazy when you think about Thomas, because I thought after he came back from the injury that forced him to miss the 12 games, he had a heck of a December, but January's been very inconsistent, and I just don't think Pavel Buchnevich has lived up to the standards that you expect to have from him. And when your best players aren't your best players, these are the results that you're going to have, and it just seems like 3 years running now, we're talking about the Blues potentially not making the playoffs. And a lot of the times, the crux of it is that your best players haven't been your best players all the time. And if that's the case, you're not going to make the playoffs.
Will the club be forced to make some tough decisions in the offseason with some of those names that you just mentioned if they don't find some level of consistency, playoffs or not, just, you know, fixing some of those issues between now and the end of this year?
I think they're going to take a good, long, hard look at whether you're going to invest in some of the players that they initially felt like they were going to invest in. Let's just take, for example, Robert Thomas and Jordan Kyrou. Obviously, two players that they believed in at the time, believed that they wanted to invest in, wanted these guys to be a part of the long-term future. Well, these guys right now do not have any kind of protection with their contracts. But that all expires on July 1st. July 1st, these guys have full no-trade protection that kicks in. So I think they're going to take a good, long, hard look, not just at those two, but there's going to be other veterans on this team. You're going to have some guys now that actually have full no-trade protection right now that's going to disappear come July 1st. So they're going to take a look at some of these guys and feel, and they're going to have to ask the hard question, can we win with these guys while we're grooming these prospects and getting the next wave and the next generation to blend in with these guys? Those are going to be some of the tough questions that they're going to have to ask. And there's going to be a number of them. It's not just those two guys that I mentioned to you. You're going to have some guys on that blue line as well that you're going to have to ask these hard questions of. And it's just basic. It sounds simple, but you have to answer the question with a yes or a no. You can't be in that middling middle as the Blues have been in the standings now for 3 years.
What is the frustration level right now for a Doug Armstrong?
I think he's frustrated, but not maybe to the point that some people may think. I think that they understand that this was a road that they knew they were going to have to go down at some point. I thought maybe this year that they thought that they were going to be able to take that next step and maybe be a playoff team again, because obviously he's made some moves. I mean, this goes back to the summer, you know, bringing in not necessarily household names where they're eye-popping and going, wow, these are going to be difference makers, but role players, complementary players that have experience in the league, like a Roddick Fox, Matthew Joseph. You took a chance on an Alexander Texier who's 25 years old, and they're going to get a good look at him. the rest of this year to see what they have. He made an in-season trade that I thought was a very good one for Cam Fowler, and that to me was a reinforcement from a GM thinking, hey, I'm giving you some help here, now take it and run with it, and they haven't been able to do it. It's just the inconsistent. I think they're frustrated more than anything that this team is consistently inconsistent, mm-hmm. and that's just the cycle that they're going to have to at some point break. They're not hitting the panic button yet. I think, and I don't want to say that it would have been a panic button move if he would have came out yesterday and said, yeah, we're going to bring up Dvorsky. Yeah, we're going to bring up some of these young guys from Springfield and just let them go. But if they continue down this road and it gets to a point, you know, where you're looking at 20, 25 games left in the season, you know, 15 games or whatever it is, you might as well bring some of these young guys up, give them a taste of the life here, let them get acclimated a little bit and kind of give them a little bit of a head start as they start their careers moving forward.
Blues back at it. They've got one against Colorado coming up on Friday night. Luke Korak does an amazing job covering the Blues. You read him at NHL.com. He's the Blues site editor over at the Hockey News as well. Follow him on Twitter at LKorak10. Lou, we always appreciate you taking time for us. Thanks so much, and we'll talk to you again real soon.
All right, man. Take care.
Very good. Luke Korak joining us here on the program. Appreciate him taking a few moments with us. Good on Doug Armstrong for not being frustrated. I would be incredibly frustrated. I think fans are frustrated. Not to a point where I don't think it's not to the level of Cardinals fans frustration. They're not, you know, leaving Enterprise Center half empty or anything like that. But, man, the worst thing, and this is sports, this is life, this is whatever. The worst thing is when you have hope, like legit hope, and then it's kind of pulled out from underneath you. And in many ways, think about how you felt about this team following those back-to-back wins against the Calgary Flames, where they get within 1 point of a playoff spot. And even after that, they go lose at Utah, but come back with a win against Vegas. And you still feel like, so at that point, they had won four of five of seven. Just, it feels like they're on a run. It feels like they're going to go do something. And then they come home for a three-game homestand, and they play three games where they lose all three games by multiple goals, 4-2, 2-0, 5-2. And you go from being a point out of a playoff spot to being, you know, 5 points out of a playoff spot. And it is incredibly frustrating because this team keeps giving you hope, and then that hope keeps going away. And we've discussed it a lot here recently about the work that it's going to take to make up, you know, even 3 points in the standings. And all of a sudden, they're now 5 points back of Calgary, and they're just barely in front of Utah. It's not a good position for this team to be in right now by any stretch of the mind. We are going to take a break, and when we return, we're going to be joined by St. Louis University men's basketball player Gibson Jimerson, all-time points leader in the program. He had a big night for sure last night as he scores 26 points, helping the Billikens to a big win against VCU, 78-69. That was something to see last night. Gibson Jimerson joins us coming up in just a moment here on a Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX. It's a Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. My name is Matt Pauly, continuing to take you through the program. Last night, what a win for the Billikens. They knock off VCU by a 78-69 score with the win. SLU is now sitting with a 6-2 record in Atlantic 10 play, even with VCU, and they've got another big game coming up on Friday night when they're going to match up against Dayton. Big game yesterday for Gibson Jimerson. He scores 26 points to lead the way, and we're very happy to welcome him onto the program right now. Gibson, thanks so much for taking some time with us today. How are you?
I'm doing well, man. Man, appreciate it. Yeah, I'm glad to be on. It was definitely a fun one last night. You know, anytime you can get a win like that, you know, on your home court with the fans and everything, it's always a good time. So yeah, it was fun.
What does it say about your team in the sense that when you went to VCU a couple weeks ago, it did not look like that, and then a lot of improvement really in just 2 weeks, and you were able to come up with a win like that last night?
Yeah, I think it just shows that we're a resilient group. You know, we can kind of learn from previous games. And you're right. Like, you know, we went down there and, you know, we kind of got punched in the mouth a little bit. And we kind of learned that, you know, in order to beat a team like that, you have to be extremely physical. You have to be locked into the details. And I think we were both of those things last night. You know, we didn't shoot the ball great, but, you know, we relied on our defense. We rebounded and, you know, we made enough plays down the stretch to get a win.
Yeah, you mentioned the rebounding. In the second half, you guys out-rebound VCU 23-13. You end up just narrowly beating them in the rebounding edge, 37-36. Can you speak to the impact? Because, I mean, you outscored them 50-38 in the second half. How much of that did have to do with how well you guys rebounded in the second half?
Yeah, I mean, we knew from the first game and just kind of, you know, who they are as a team. You know, they go to the offensive glass, everybody on their team crashes. So we knew we had to be physical, box out. And, you know, I think there were a couple bad bounces that went their way. But for the most part, I thought we did a good job of hitting bodies. You know, we knew that, you know, if we were going to, you know, give them, I think they shot 35 more shots than us in the first game. If we're going to do that and also, you know, have some turnovers, like it was going to be mathematically impossible for us to win. But, you know, we put bodies, like you said, in the second half, we were cracking and, you know, we were able to get those rebounds. And I thought that was able to allow us to get out in transition and score a lot of easy baskets, which in a game like that is what you need.
Yeah, team shoots 47%. The shooting here recently hasn't been great, but it was a little bit better last night. When you're going through periods where maybe you're not making as many baskets as you would like, is it something that even for you personally, is it something that you just kind of know is going to come back around at some point? Is it something that's talked about, worked on? Like, because last night it was a pretty solid offensive night for you guys.
Yeah, I think, you know, for us, it's all about the process of it. Like if our offensive process is good, if we're getting good looks, you know, we're confident that they'll go in. And, you know, some nights it don't. That's where, you know, like kind of like in the past few games, you got to hang your hat on the defensive end. That's what travels. And for us, you know, we got to be able to win games where we're not shooting well, and games that we are, you know, still defend. But, you know, we'll have a, you know, those games will be, you know, we'll have a, you know, a lot of points. But, you know, for us, it's on the defensive end, you know, staying locked in and making sure our offensive process is good. That's all you can really ask for, you know, making shots, missing shots, that comes and goes. And, you know, for us, you know, we're confident in who we are. And even myself, like, you know, I'm never going to let misses affect, you know, if I'm going to shoot it or not. I'm confident in the work I've put in. But, you know, for us, just hanging our hat on that defensive end is what's been huge for us.
Kobe Johnson last night matches his career high of 19 points. What did you see from him?
Yeah, he was awesome, man. He was everywhere. Started, you know, set the tone early, you know, made a three, had a couple nice, you know, drives, super physical, you know, elite defense last night. Yeah, I love him. You know, he's a great guy. And, you know, he kind of set that tone for us in the game. And, you know, when he's turned up like that, even as well as Kalu was, you know, we need those guys to come out and be aggressive, you know, kind of take a little bit of that load off of us. And, you know, Kobe was awesome last night. He was everywhere. And yeah, it was just a big time performance from him.
We're talking with Gibson Jimerson after SLU got a huge win against VCU last night. So much talk about Robbie Avila and everything that he does, and he fills up the box score every night. What does he do in a game that makes his teammates, people like you, better? How does he help everybody else?
Yeah, I mean, I think obviously first is the attention that he draws. You know, obviously he's going to be, you know, top of the scouting report for us just because of, you know, his scoring, his passing, and his you know, just his IQ. You know, he allows us to play a certain way. You know, he's kind of the hub of the offense. He gets everybody involved. And, you know, last night, you know, he didn't, you know, started off kind of slow, but, you know, as the game went on, he kind of wore them down a little bit, was able to get mismatches, kick the ball out. He's always going to make the right play. And, you know, for him, I think it's just been huge, and it's allowed, you know, myself, Swope, and the other guys, like we get, you know, a lot of space from just him being on the court. And yeah, he's extremely important to what we're doing. And, you know, he's also a confident guy. You know, he's not going to let a couple turnovers or missed shots affect him. But yeah, you know, him playing his game is what we need.
When Shea Fitz Arena is loud, when it's filled up, it literally is one of the best college basketball environments you're going to see. Looks like it should be close to that on Friday. Good crowd last night as well. Can you speak to the impact that the fans had on that game last night?
Yeah, it was huge, and it was from the jump, and it was big time. The student section was awesome. You know, they were really into it. It was, you know, sometimes it was hard for us to kind of hear what was going on as well, but you know, every time we made a big shot or got a big stop, you know, they were there for us. So yeah, it's huge. And, you know, Friday, you know, I hope it's the same, if not better. you know, with a good Dayton team coming in. So yeah, man, when it's packed like that, it's rocking. It's a hard place to win, you know, for road teams. So, you know, we need that throughout the rest of the year. Cause that's definitely a huge advantage for us.
You're in a really unique spot as a returner. You've got all these new teammates, you got new coaches, you've been around for a while. What has this year and this experience been like for you? Whereas a guy who's a little bit older than most of the other guys, but you're sitting there in a new system and a new coach and doing everything new, like many of the other players.
Yeah, I think it was a little bit of kind of a breath of fresh air. I think a little bit of a reset as well. You know, obviously playing for Ford for 5 years, and you kind of got used to how we did things. And I think, you know, now it kind of got a little bit of that reset. Had to learn, you know, kind of a new system, you know, new ways of playing defense. Obviously, personnel has been a huge change. So I think for me, just kind of attacking it as a new challenge and, you know, really embracing kind of what Schertz wants to do, what a lot of the guys on my team do. And, you know, I've really enjoyed it. It's been fun. You know, it hasn't been, you know, like a linear, you know, easy path, but you know, for me it's been a fun challenge. And obviously I think you're seeing that now with our group and myself, like we're all starting to click kind of at the right time. But man, I've enjoyed it. It's been fun, you know, kind of what I was hoping for in my last season at SLU.
I got to ask you, last night, unfortunately, one of the big focuses on the game is what happened in the stands. There was a bit of a fight or a scuffle. It actually delayed the game for about 5 minutes. What in the world are you thinking as all of that is going on? It's very rare for something in the stands to impact something going on the floor.
Yeah, no, that's the first time that's happened in my career. Yeah, it was weird. Like, I think, you know, we were huddled up in a timeout, and obviously end of the game, you know, they were kind of making a little bit of a, not really a comeback, but they had made it, you know, a shot, I think. But honestly, I saw it happening, and then, you know, I was just trying to stay as focused as I could on what we were doing. We were drawing up an inbounds play to get the ball in, obviously critical part of the game. But it's hard in those scenarios when something like that's happening. And, you know, obviously for them, it was in front of their bench, so it was even more so of probably a distraction. But, you know, for us and for myself, I think it was just focusing on what we were doing. We ended up going and sitting down on the bench and just trying to, you know, not pay attention to that. Let you know, security and everybody handle that. But yeah, it was interesting.
Yeah, for sure. A big game coming up on Friday. Huge week on VCU, Dayton, back to back at home. I know you guys probably haven't really been able to jump in on Dayton too much quite yet. But as you look to this game coming up on Friday, how big of a game is this? What are the keys? What are your thoughts going into another big opportunity?
Yeah, like you said, it's a huge week for us. Two great, you know, home games. Obviously, with Dayton, it's going to be kind of a rivalry game. You know, we get them twice every year, once here, once there. So I'm super excited. I think we're going to get their best shot. You know, and that's what we want. We want to be tested like that. We want to, you know, go through that as a team. And, you know, for us, I think it's just, you know, focusing on the details, like we've been locked in the scouting report. And like you said, you know, we haven't talked about them yet. We'll do that later today. We'll kind of get into personnel and what they do. But, you know, for us, I think it's, you know, locking into that, but also focusing on ourselves, you know, kind of controlling what we can control. And we'll have two great days of preparation, and we'll be ready for their best shot, you know, Friday night. But yeah, it's going to be a big time game, fun environment. I can't wait.
Gibson Jimerson, he is the Billikens' all-time leader in points and three-pointers made. Helps lead SLU to a huge win against VCU yesterday. They've got Dayton coming up on Friday night. You'll be able to hear it right here on KMOX. There are some tickets that are still available for a 6 o'clock tip, on Friday night at Chaffetz Arena. Gibson, thanks so much for taking the time with us. Best of luck on Friday and the rest of the season. Hopefully we can catch up with you again down the line.
Appreciate it, man. Yep, great to be on. And really enjoyed it, man. Thank you.
That's Gibson Jimerson. Again, he had a big game yesterday, 26 points as he continues to add on to that record that he has with the Billikens, and they've got another big one coming up on Friday. They're going to match up against Dayton as the Billikens try to stay atop the Atlantic 10 standings. We'll take a break. We'll come back, and we'll wrap up this edition of the program. It's a Graybar Sports Open Line. More in just a moment right here on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on KMOX.
Back at it here on a Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX. My name is Matt Pauley. We are starting to wrap things up for the evening. Up next, we've got the Gas House Gang, our Wednesday night edition, which means you get more of me, but you also get some Tom Ackerman. It's going to be myself and Tom. We've got a lot to get to from 8 o'clock to 9 o'clock this evening, so that'll get started just after the 8 o'clock news. And, of course, just a reminder for you, We record that, or we perform it live at 12 noon each day. It's not just a recording that we play back later. It's a video show that you can take part in every day by hopping on the KMOX Sports social media channels, whether that's YouTube. That's a really good way to watch it. You can even subscribe to the KMOX Sports account, and then you can get notifications when we're starting the show, and you can comment there, and we see everything. But you can also watch it on the other social media channels as well, whether it's Twitter or Facebook, whatever it might be. But I always enjoy being able to play that back for you each night. But if you're looking for something to do at 12 noon each day, the Gas House Gang, we are there for you. So make sure to check that out. Couple quick baseball things before we do call it a day. Former Cardinal Johan Oviedo, he became the first player in this year's offseason to get an arbitration decision, and it does not go in his direction. As most of these, I've always believed that the system is rigged against the players. Now, this is this was actually a substantial difference. I always get frustrated when you go to arbitration over a small number, like the whole thing that's going on right now with Andre Pallante being separated by just $150,000. I continue to be hopeful that they don't walk into a room and go through an arbitration hearing over $150,000. For Oviedo, is actually a somewhat legitimate notable difference between what he went in for and what the team offered. He had put in a salary request for $1.15 million. The Pirates wanted to pay him $850,000, and the Pirates won the decision. So he's going to make $850,000 this upcoming season. Last year was 9-14, 4.32 ERA, 32 starts. He got a raise, but for you or me, this would be a substantial raise for a baseball player. It's not. He went from making $765,000 last year to making $850,000. So a raise of less than $100,000 for Oviedo. And it's just, as a player, odds are stacked against you. You go to these things, and the owners are always going to win a higher percentage than the players. A couple other things happened that when we talk about the NL Central, and I am of the belief that the division is wide open, wide open. Right now, who's the best team on paper? It's probably the Chicago Cubs, probably. But that doesn't really mean that much, and they certainly have not improved themselves the way that I expected them to improve themselves. If you would have told me that the Tucker move and the Presley move was kind of going to be the two big things that they do here towards the end of free agency, and this is where they'd be right now, I probably would have thought the opposite of that. I really thought that they were going to be a team that would make more of a splash. So they're probably the best team in the division right now, but it's not an overwhelming difference. They certainly don't have a clamp on winning the division this upcoming season. The Brewers are the Brewers. They lost some people for sure. Willie Adames isn't there anymore. Devin Williams isn't there anymore. On paper, it looks like they're ready to take a step back. But last year on paper, it looked like they were ready to take a step back. This is the annual rite of tradition when it comes to the NL Central. Look at the Brewers roster, discount who they're going to be, and then watch them go win the division. I don't think that's going to happen this year, but I didn't think it was going to happen last year. All I can do is look at who they are as a team and evaluate that. And I'll say this same stuff every single year, that they're probably going to do what they always do. But on paper, they don't look like they should be a division-winning team. I've said over and over that I think the Cincinnati Reds might be the most talented team in the division. A lot of it is young talent. A lot of it is unproven talent. I don't think that they are the best team in the division. Sometimes being the most talented team and being the best team are very different things. And one of the questions I've had is, if a Terry Francona walks into the Cincinnati Reds, he doesn't do that without some level of assurance that they are going to do things to be good. And they've made a couple small moves, very small moves, but moves that could end up being a big deal. They acquire relief pitcher Taylor Rogers in a trade with the San Francisco Giants. They send back a minor league reliever. As Jeff Passan from ESPN wrote about this, he said, continuing additions and hopes of contending in the National League Central under new manager Terry Francona. They also made a minor league deal for a former Brewers pitcher in Wade Miley. Miley is recovering from elbow surgery, so you don't know what that's going to look like for him. He missed most of last season with the Brewers. He's expected to return at some point in 2025. This will be his second stint with the Reds, having played for them in 2020 and also 2021. So we've seen Wade Miley. He can be a nice piece. He can be a solid starter. He's coming off an elbow surgery and won't even have a full spring training. So there's a very large question mark when it comes to him. But maybe, just maybe, we should be talking more about the Cincinnati Reds and these small little incremental type things that they are doing to try to make themselves better. I'll say it again. Terry Francona doesn't walk into that door unless he feels like that organization is ready to make some moves to make sure that if it that put them in position to possibly contend, and if they are contending, do some more things. So the only team, and I like the Pirates. I think the Pirates have some good young pieces for sure. The only team that I really don't feel like has much of a chance at all of contending in the division is the Pirates. And from a Vegas standpoint, the Pirates and Cardinals essentially have the same odds to win the Central, so maybe I'm giving the Cardinals a little bit too much credit. And obviously, I'm in St. Louis, and I see what they're going through, and I just feel like there's an opportunity for the Cardinals to be a lot better than people expect them to be. I could be wrong. I could be wrong on that for sure. But we talk a lot about the Cubs. We talk a lot about the Brewers. Some folks talk about the Cardinals. Maybe we should be spending some more time talking about the Reds because they keep doing things, and they're doing small things, and the Cardinals have yet to do much of anything this offseason. They haven't spent a dollar in Major League free agency quite yet. That's going to change at some point in the next week and a half. I would be beyond shocked. If I am doing my first show from Jupiter, Florida, and the roster looks exactly like it looks right now, my level of shock will be pretty darn high because I 100% expect them to at the very least bring in a relief pitcher that they feel like that they can use in leverage spots. And they've talked about a right-handed bat. We'll see whether or not that comes to fruition. But absolutely, the bullpen being addressed at least a little bit with some with a veteran being infused in there, I'm pretty sure that's going to happen before pitchers and catchers report. But every minute that goes by, every second that ticks by, we are closer and closer to that report date. And the chances of me being incorrect in that assessment start to go up and up and up. I'm also of the belief that Nolan Arenado is likely to be traded before we get to camp as well. However, the only thing I would say on that is if Bregman ends up signing with the Red Sox, I think there's at that point, I might say that there's, at the very least, it's a 50-50 shot that he comes to camp with the Cardinals. But if Bregman ends up somewhere, if he goes to Houston, I just think that Boston thing is going to end up playing out. And Boston still wants Bregman, and they've probably got, of all those teams, they probably have the ability. They may not have the stomach for it, but they probably have the ability to go more years and more money per year than these other teams that are in pursuit of Bregman. That's it for this edition of Graybar Sports Open. What a show. What a fun show that we had today. Thanks to Gibson Jimerson who joined us just a few minutes ago. Thanks to Isaac Bruce who joined us in the first hour. Bernie Miklas was with us. Luke Korak was with us. This was an awesome show. If you missed any of it, you can always go back to the Sports Open Line podcast there at KMOX.com on the Odyssey app, and you can listen back to anything that you would like to listen back to. The Gas House Gang with myself and Tom Ackerman on the way next. And tomorrow it's the Countdown to Opening Day show. Mike Claiborne and myself will have you an extended conversation with Randy Flores. We're going to talk with Jimmy Crooks. We've got some other things up our sleeves as well. So that's coming up tomorrow from 6 to 8. Talk to you then here on KMOX.